So, for those who are newcomers to what I'm doing here, very briefly, this series, it started a year ago. It's sort of in COVID. One of the things I was missing in COVID was giving talks. Well, this is a, you know, I'm still not giving a live talk, but what I missed about giving talks was it was always an opportunity for me to try out new ideas when I had something that was exciting to me and I was speaking at a conference or something. I'd love to sort of go in or do a workshop or talk about something that was new and exciting me. And I realized I didn't have that opportunity anymore. And so I started these talks with a lot of encouragement from Linda, my techie and supporter here. She said, yes, let's do it. So here I am doing it. We've had five, this is the fifth session, four sessions so far. The first one was on the title, Mindfulness of Being, which I should very briefly explain. Mindfulness, I mean, it's such a common phrase, these word these days. It's usually mindfulness of something, whether it's mindfulness of breath or feelings or whatever it is, experience. I'm more interested in being mindful of actually our self, the being, the I-ness that's there, the, if you like, the transcendent aspect of ourselves, which most mindfulness doesn't touch on. It takes us close sometimes. And so the first talk I was looking at that mindfulness of being. All these are recorded so you can listen to them if you're new. Then I looked at rest in natural great peace, that line, because there's so much in that rest in natural great peace, this exhausted mind beaten helplessly by karma and neurotic thoughts, like the relentless fury of the pounding waves in the infinite ocean of samsara. Some famous lines, but I'd sort of expounded on that. Then looked at, the Four Noble Truths, or particularly the Eightfold Path of Buddhism from a non-dual perspective, which was something I've been thinking about quite a bit. And then all these things, all these talks, they're things that I actually haven't talked about before, really. And then the last one was on letting go, which I had talked about before. And then this one, I want to look at attention, because it's something I've been thinking about for a long time. It's fascinated me. What is attention and the role of attention in awareness? It's such an intimate part of awareness, and yet we seldom actually consider attention itself. So that's what I want to look at today. And what I'll do is I'll talk for a while, don't know, 50, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, something like that. Then I'll lead a meditation, and then we'll have time for questions, discussions. And the way we like to do this is if you have any questions, put them in the chat. That's that little hand at the should be at hand at the bottom of your screen, the little chat symbol. Put your questions in the chat, or if you want to ask a question, and Linda will be monitoring the chat. I can't multitask. When I'm talking or answering a question, I just want to be with you and not have half of my attention distracted over onto the chat and what people are saying. So Linda will monitor the questions and sometimes group them together or whatever. So as I was saying, it's attention is so intimate to awareness. In fact, we often use the words interchangeably. And when we say, you know, I'm aware of the ticking of the clock. It's like, you know, my attention has noticed. I've noticed the ticking of the clock. That's where my attention is at the moment. You know, also in your awareness may be the sounds of the birds or what you're seeing or feeling in the body, whatever. There's a lot of other things going on in the awareness, but the attention is like, it's the bit of our awareness that we're actually interested in that moment. And it's always there to one degree or another. And this, I've been fascinated by it and the sort of types of attention, but also what it means in terms of our awakening to who we are and how we use attention. And those are some things I want to really talk about today. And it's interesting that I sound like saying we never pay attention to attention. So what I want to do today is actually pay attention to attention itself. And as most of you know, when I use the word awareness, I'm generally not using it in the sense of like being aware of the ticking of the clock or being aware of this or that, which is how we usually use it, often use it. And that's when it's almost synonymous with attention. For me, there is the whole field of awareness that is happening at any moment. Awareness is just the fact that we are aware. The one thing we know for sure is we are aware beings. And within any moment, there is this vast multidimensional field of awareness, which is what I'm seeing, what I'm hearing, what I'm sensing in my body, what I'm smelling, the thoughts that are passing through my mind, my feelings. They're all experiences in awareness. They're all things I am aware of, if you like. So there's the field of awareness in which experience arises. So that's the way I'm using awareness. And then attention is like the spotlight within that. And that spotlight is always on something or other within that vast field of awareness. And it's like, that's the point of all this that we're actually interested in. It's like that I am interested in. So it's the spotlight. And it's a bit like, I think if you're in, you know, if you went out just after dark and it's not completely dark or in a dim room and you had a flashlight, or rather, I'm speaking American now, you have a torch for us English speaking people, and you go around looking for things. You use it to focus in, to shine the light on something, to see it more clearly. And that's in a way what we're doing with the attention. We have this vast field of awareness, and then we're shining the light of our awareness. We're focusing it, if you like, to bring into focus a particular part of our field of experience, so what we're interested in, so that we can actually attend to it more clearly and say bring it into focus. So it's really about how we isolate a particular object of our experience from the whole field of awareness. And so it's like targeting our awareness down to a particular experience. And generally, and this is very generally, I see there's two basic modes of awareness. There's the focused mode, which is often the way we use the word attention, pay attention, you know, pay attention. Means focus in on something or other, hold the attention to this. That's the most common way. And then there's another softer way of attending to something where you're not particularly, where you're not holding the attention anywhere. This might be when you're, you know, out in the forest, just enjoying the spectacle of just the trees and the greenery. You're not focusing on any particular tree or anything. A bird may come along, and in that moment you move from this open, expansive, soft attention to something. Suddenly you're looking at the bird. What is that bird? You've moved into a focused attention. But generally, you know, there's this open, soft, relaxed attention. And when you're in that relaxed attention, it's broader. It's like sort of opening up the beam of your flashlight. The attention's broader and taking in more, and it's relaxed, and it wanders, if you like. The attention wanders from one thing here to another thing there, just anything that's of interest. And that's really what the attention is for. So whatever is of interest to you is to just, let's say, bring it more into focus. And it's completely natural to have this alternation. I think it's natural to just have this broad open awareness when everything is fine, where you're sitting there in the garden or whatever, looking at a sunset or listening to a piece of music. You know, you're not focusing on individual notes or an individual instrument. You may do, but generally it's like it's an open, broad, soft attention. And then when something changes, the more focused, deliberate attention clicks in. And it's almost like the brain is designed to notice change. I mean, this is something that I found fascinating when I was studying neurophysiology, psychology. The brain doesn't look at what is. It monitors changes. It monitors any differences. And it's fascinating. If you hold the eye completely still, if you sort of paralyze the muscles so that the image on the retina isn't changing, within a minute or two, it just fades away. There's no change. It's like it makes more efficiency for the brain to notice change. Or if you go into, you know, a float tank, a sensory immersion tank, where you're, you know, the temperature's the same as your body, whatever it is, there's no sound, it's dark. Within a few moments, you start, minutes or two, you start losing awareness of your individual boundaries. So this is a natural thing. When there's change, then the attention comes in and begins to notice the change. So this alternation between a sort of open awareness, and then when something happens, a bird flies by, there's some change that is possibly of interest or value, an opportunity or some danger, then the attention moves into this more focused mode. And this, I say, is completely natural. And I think it relates to the left and right brain. And some of you may know Ian McIlchrist. He wrote this wonderful book about 10 years ago called The Master and His Emissary, in which he was really reconsidering the whole of the research that had been done on the left-right brain over the years. When that research first started coming out, which was really in the late 60s, early 70s, the research started coming out, the idea was, and it's still sort of the prevalent popular idea, is the left brain is language, it's good at mathematics, logic, etc. The right brain is art, music, creativity. That's now been seen to be a very, very simplistic idea. And what Ian does in this incredible book, I really recommend it for anybody interested, he shows that actually the left brain is really good at tasks which involve the mode of focused attention. So that's the attention style of the left brain. And obviously, you know, mathematics require focused attention, listening to words, speaking requires focused attention on the flow of thinking. The right brain is much better at that more open, relaxed attention, which is saying that's why, you know, people associate with music with the right brain, because you want, if you're listening to music, you're in that much more open way of being with things. So something else I just wanted to mention is the root of the word attention is interesting. This is something Rupert Spira, who some of you I know, pointed out some time ago. Attention comes from the Latin tendere, the verb tendere, which actually means to stretch. And so when we're attending to something, it's like we're stretching our awareness towards it. And I like that, because when we're actually consciously, deliberately in that paying attention mode, holding our attention to something, it can almost feel like that. It almost has a sort of slight, very subtle mental sensation, like we're stretching ourselves, stretching our awareness towards whatever it is of interest that we want to focus on. And with that, the other side of that is that it also creates a slight tension in the mind. And again, tension comes from the same root, to stretch. Attention is a stretching. So when we are focused on something, there tends to be this slight stretching, a slight tension in the mind. And I think, you know, some of you have probably noticed this when you've been focused on something, or even meditation, when you're focused on a particular, you've got focus drawn into a particular thought or something, and you realize it and you just let it go. You just like realize, whoa, that was taking some that was taking a bit of energy. There was some tension there in focusing on that thought. And we need to, in a way, put effort or tension into it, because the attention is going to wander off on something else that's interesting. If you're, you know, working on, I don't know, writing email or something that needs your concentration, and the sound, you know, it's the sound of a bird or some music next door, the attention will actually wander off to see if that's more interesting. So we're actually holding the attention to something against that natural tendency to wander off to anything else that may be of interest. And that's why it takes some effort, some tension in the mind. And that, in a way, is probably the cost of having to paying attention to something, trying to hold it there. So another way I'd like to look at this is thinking of it as zoomed in or zoomed out. There's the two modes of attention. There's the zoomed in attention, we're zooming in on something, and then there's the zoomed out, like with a camera, we zoom out. It's the wide view, the open, softer awareness is the more wide view. What happens, unfortunately, I would say with us, it's part of, you know, part of the unfortunate personal, social circumstances we all get ourselves in most of the time, which is why we're all here looking for some, whatever it is, spiritual awakening or something, or meditation. We end up far too much in that focused mode. And you can say, you know, one of the reasons we may meditate is to begin to relax that focus mode. I'm not be doing this in a meditation in a little bit, but we want to relax that focus mode, that doing mode, and actually come back to that more relaxed, open mode of attention. You know, if you look at our lives, you know, probably, maybe, I don't know, it's easy to have 90, 95% of the day caught up in that focus mode. We move from one thing, then something else catches our attention. We're focused on that, then something else, then something else. And we're going through with our attention focused on something or other the whole time. So what is really valuable is being able to step out of the focus mode, to zoom out again, to zoom out into, as Ram Dass would put it, being here now. But that focus mode is also, it's really driven as well by what I call the ego mode of thinking, which is not just the ego, the egocentric, self-centered mode, but for me, what I call the egoic mode of thinking is the thinking that is looking after ourselves. What do we need? Is this safe? Is there a great opportunity here? What's this mean? Or whatever it is, or what do people think of me? All that sort of stuff, which is actually basically there for our safety and our survival, to help us be safe and survive. That's the ego mode of thought. It's valuable and it has limitations because we get caught up in it far too much. But that ego mode takes us into this focused attention a lot more. It's like, if there's something happening in our life, it's like, okay, what does this mean? What should I do? We get caught up in focusing on our thinking about it. But more than that, it's like in our culture, there are so many distractions. It's interesting, the word distraction. You know, when you think about what does distraction mean, it means taking our attention away from something, taking our attention somewhere else. And we live in a continually distracting culture, which means what's happening continually taking our attention here, taking it there, whatever. I mean, advertising, just about every single advertisement you see is wanting to grab the attention, grab your attention about something, and then tell you, you can't be happy because you don't have something, and the only way to get happy again is to, you know, get whatever it is they're selling. They draw you into this whole thing. They grab your attention and then draw you into a whole story about how to be happy. not recognizing that if they hadn't grabbed your attention in the first place, you'd probably be absolutely fine. I mean, this is a sad irony of our society. But it's not just advertising. I mean, we live in a culture which is attention grabbing. I mean, I was reading a post recently from someone's pointing out, you know, it's an attention economy we live in now, that, you know, we produce something and we need to get attention for it. You know, you make a film about something, you want to get attention. You're on social media, you put it up there, you're looking for attention, you want people to see it. It's like, can I get attention? Or music makers, you make a piece of music, okay, how can I get attention? Or me, I mean, I write a new book and it's like, okay, I want to bring attention to it. I want to, which is fine, I want to, but let people know. It's like we're continually looking to grab other people's attention. And this post, it was quite powerful, was pointing out that, you know, more than 50% of the economy is now around how do we grab people's attention and monetize it in one way or another. And it pointed out, which I thought was a nice thing, you know, all these website companies designing web pages, you know, they could just be a basic template, you know, that says, okay, this is the company name, address, phone number, this is what it does, these are whatever it is. But no, we have to go and get better and better ones. We're competing for attention the whole time. And I mention this not so much just to, you know, as another critique of where our culture has got to, but just recognizing this is what happens to us. Our attention is being grabbed, it's being caught, it's being taken over so much of the time. And so the result is that we end up in this background state of tension, which comes from focusing here, focusing there, following what the ego thinks is important. And it's almost, as I think I've said before, this sort of background tension in the attention is really the hallmark of when we're stuck in egoic thinking. And I always say to people, you know, if you want to know if the ego is active or if you're caught in that mode, just notice, is there this background sense of attention there? Sorry, tension in the attention, is that there? So the other thing I want to look at is going a bit deeper into this. There's two ends of the attention, if you like. There's the object of attention, what we are attending to, whatever it is, whether it's, you know, an itch in the body, a bird song, piece of music, the road we're driving down, whatever it is. There's always some object of attention, whether it's a broad, open, soft awareness, or whether it's a very focused, concentrated attention, there's always an object to attention. And the side that is not usually looked at so much or explored is the subject. There's the subject of attention, which is, you know, who is attending, or what is attending, which really comes, you know, back to the essential, I think, the essential spiritual journey that we're all on ultimately, is like recognizing what is this sense of I, what is this sense of I that is aware, that is conscious, that is always present, though very seldom noticed. And that's sense of I which is attending. We say, you know, the I is the I that is aware. It's that same I that is attending. And by I here, I mean, anybody who's a little new to my way of thinking, I don't mean the personal self. It's not the I, Peter Russell, British male writer, blah, 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 blah. These are all things we identify with. These are all parts of my experience. And so, you know, some way you could say all those things of the personal self, are other objects of experience, there are other things I can attend to. You know, I can attend to this body or the fact that I'm, you know, I have been a writer, whatever it is, I can attend to them. What this is talking about is that sense of, the closest I think we can put in simple words, just that I am, that sense of I am beingness that is always there, that is attending. And this brings up an interesting question for me. It's like, this is part of my exploration here, my personal exploration, which I'm still fascinated by. And I want to share something with you. This, and it, anyway, just as, you know, fuel for your own investigation, is there some degree of volition here with attention? And I mean, the way I used to put it to myself is like, is the attention the action of awareness? Now that sounds a little strange, because you know, when we're using the word awareness in the way that I like to use the word, as just that sense of I, just that being aware, that sense of being, which is just, it's just the witness of all experience. It's sometimes called the witness of all experience, the subject. That is, there's the subject, the witness, and there's the object. And it's always said that the subject is without qualities, the pure I doesn't do anything, it just observes, it is aware of what is happening, it is not actually involved in the world, but it is, yes, I said, the witness. And so the word action doesn't really work there. I mean, it's not just a witness doesn't act. But this is the bit I've been playing with here, is if I decide to put my attention somewhere, whatever it is, you know, just looking out the window and I decide to put my attention on a leaf out there, that decision, the decision where to put my attention, is coming from, I call it the thinking mind. But the thinking mind doesn't actually put the attention. It's like I then respond and my attention moves there. So there's a way and sense which the I moves the attention to different places. Where it moves it to, I think, is decided by, you know, whatever's going on in the thinking mind, whatever, or something that comes in, a bird flying by that grabs our attention. But is the eye actually in charge of where the attention goes? And I don't have any answer to this. This is just something I am fascinated with in my own experience, which is why I'm sharing this with you now, something to play with. I mean, something that I've noticed when my mind is quiet, usually in a meditation or something, and I decide to move my attention somewhere else, it's actually a very subtle sense of movement in the mind. It's like I can feel the mind almost moving from one mode of attending, moving into something else. It's very, very subtle, but I'm just absolutely fascinated by this. And I've mentioned it to various people, but haven't got any response. People, maybe I don't explain it right. People don't understand what I'm talking about. Anyway, I want to mention it as something, you know, you may have or to play with, to see if, to notice this thing of how, is it the eye that is attending? Does it have, is it moving in a sense within the awareness? I can't put it clearly. I'm just mentioning this. Because this brings us back to the whole issue of free will, which people know I've written about. And actually there's a whole section of my site on free will. And maybe only the attention is completely free. And I'll explain what I mean by this. I personally don't think we have free will in the normal sense, you know, being able to make a free choice. For example, if I go into a restaurant and I choose something to eat, I look at the menu and I think, oh, I ate that last week and I don't fancy that, and I'm not eating meat this week and I don't like. Basically, you narrow it down to one thing and you think you've made a choice, but actually you've been involved in a decision-making process of which you didn't know the outcome. And so we've made a decision, but that choice has been conditioned by the past and things. And so there's a way in which maybe everything we do, every thought we have is conditioned by the past in some way or another. And even where we place the attention may be conditioned. You know, whether it's the bird flying by is conditioning the attention, or something that's happening, or whatever it is, something that's moving in as some feeling is conditioning where we place the attention. But the bit that fascinates me is where I think we do have free choice is our ability to withdraw the attention, to withdraw our interest. Our interest may be caught up in some thought, some story. Where we have choice is to withdraw our attention from that particular thought or story or experience, and to just allow it to be. It's not about, if we start putting the attention somewhere else, that's another conditioned response. But by choosing to, as I say, to unplace the attention, it's placed somewhere, just to unplace it, withdraw our interest. And when we do that, then what we usually find, what I usually find, I have to speak personally here, not for you, but firstly, there's that sense of relief. I notice the energy, the tightness that's going into the attention, there's a sense of relief. Also, that the present begins to reveal itself again. It's like, I hadn't noticed that. Oh, there's the sound of this. Oh, there's this in my body, whatever it is. And then in that quietness, what I find is my inner voice starts coming through with what would be the most appropriate action or thing to be doing at this time. And so I am not so much choosing to do something, I am choosing to withdraw my interest in deciding what to do. And in the spaciousness that comes, in that quiet spaciousness that comes, arises whatever I am called to do, which I find it's just so valuable. It's like the choice not to choose is the choice that can change our life in a way, because what comes out of our inner wisdom is so much more, I find, so much more helpful. So I've been moving on. Let's pause and have a meditation here. And then we have some discussion. Just want to just take some of this into a meditation. And what I like to do in terms of when I'm meditating with you in a group is actually I'll switch off my video, and I actually lower my computer screen so I'm not looking at anything, just so that it makes me be more internal. You can do whatever you like, but I just like to encourage, while we're meditating, in a sense, not to be on the Zoom call in ourselves, just listening. And at the end, I'll ring a bell, which will be a time to come and come back into visual reality. So, I've been speaking a lot. So let's just pause. I'd like to always take a few deeper breaths. Breathing out more fully. Just every time we breathe out, it just allows us to relax. Just relaxing the body. It's like relaxed breath is a sign to the body that everything's okay. So we just allow ourselves to relax. Letting the weight go, be taken by the chair or whatever. If you notice any holding, on in the body. Just see if that can just soften and let go. And just noticing what is there for you in the present moment. What is there in the body? There's probably a lot of different things there, sensations, the touch of the clothes, pressures, warmth, whatever. Little thoughts coming in. Sounds, my voice, other sounds. Not focusing on anything in this meditation, not focusing on anything at all. We're just being with what is, not trying to get anywhere or change anything. But just noticing how the attention is just, it just moves around. You may notice something in the body, some sound, the attention wanders over there. Some thought temporarily grabs the attention. But when you notice you've actually got caught up in some thought again because it's so interesting, just this thing of choosing, we have the choice not to follow it anymore. We have the choice to withdraw our interest from it. And just when we withdraw our interest from it, we just come back to here, to just being here with our experience. And just noticing this quality of attending to something, whatever it is, whatever is taking our interest in this moment and it moves around, just noticing this quality of actually attending to it. It's our interest, put it this way, our interest is there, whatever it is. And now wherever your attention, wherever it may be, it doesn't matter. Just explore, you know, could your attention be a little more relaxed? Could your attention be a little softer? And if you could let your attention just soften and relax a little bit, just notice how that is. What's it like? With some of us, there's often a sense of like we come back a little closer to ourself, to our own beingness. Or we let the attention relax, just feel a little easier, more spacious. Or noticing greater sense of quiet or stillness, or just ease. So we're really in this meditation just noticing what it's like when we let the attention relax from a tighter, more focused mode into just this very open, spacious mode of attention. In which we just drop back closer to ourself, closer to our own sense of being. Because when we're attending to something else, the more we attend, the more it, in a way, takes us away from ourselves. So as we let the attention soften and relax, it's like the attention can begin to come back and our own sense of beingness, our own sense of I. We can begin to attend to that. It's like it's turned back 180 degrees instead of being turned out into the world, whether it's even just the world of a thought or some feeling. We're just turning it 180 degrees back and just attending to this sense of being, this sense of me that becomes more apparent as we allow the attention itself to relax. We'll just take another minute or so just to be with this practice. Just whenever you notice the tension somewhere, wherever it is, however soft it is, just even asking, could the attention be even more relaxed? Could it be even softer? And notice how that is. And slowly begin to close the meditation. Always encourage people to remember not to jump out of it, but just to maybe move your fingers or toes a little bit. Open your eyes slowly, let a little light in. We gradually return to being here together in the group. And I mentioned in the description of today, in the emails that went out, that I find this, in my own life, one of the easiest ways of just coming back to being in day-to-day life, in the middle of anything I'm doing, anytime, just to be able to pause two things. One, to choose to withdraw my interest from something, but in this respect also just to let the attention relax. Wherever I am, I can just notice, okay, where's my attention, with it, without even trying to move the attention or change it. It doesn't mean I've got to put my attention somewhere else, but in this moment, wherever my attention is, without putting it somewhere else, can I allow it to relax? Can I let my attention relax? And it always does to some degree or other. And so I always just come back to myself to some degree or other. So that's why I share this as, you know, what I find probably the simplest and easiest, one of the most powerful ways of just coming back to being. Anyway, I've gone on longer than I expected. I hope it wasn't too waffly, so a bit. So let's see if we have any questions, Linda.
Yes, we've been gathering a few as you've been speaking. So I'll run through a few that came while you were speaking. James, do you want me to tell you the names of people? Because James, yes, Monroe. Okay.
Oh, James. Yes, of course. James, he's a regular.
Got a couple. Hello, from him. Yep. So one was, maybe awareness is being aware of everything in general and nothing in particular, and not accompanied by thinking. Maybe awareness is being aware of everything in general and nothing in particular, and not accompanied by thinking.
Yep. That's again, it's like we're using awareness in a few subtly different ways within one sentence here. I think what you're talking about there is like that open, total, relaxed awareness, where we can, where there is just awareness, and we're not aware of any one thing. It's an interesting question. Can one not be aware? Can there be no attention in the awareness, no attention whatsoever? I don't know. I find even in the, you know, the quietest, stillest states of meditation, the attention may just be there, relaxed, but there's still, it's not focused on anything. It's something I play with. Anyway, can there be nothing that's actually the focus of attention? I don't know. But also maybe, Linda, maybe if you can, you know, bring the people on, it's easier, you know, speak right directly with the questions.
Yeah. Right. Well, James can unmute himself. I've got to find him.
I'm here.
Hi, James. Great.
Hi. I was actually thinking, Peter, that, I mean, as I'm speaking to you right now, I'm aware that I'm speaking. I'm aware that I'm seeing. I'm moving my hands as I'm speaking, but I'm also have a broader awareness. So I, and one of the other comments I made was whether is that there seems something very natural about that I'm not, in other words, my attention is not being lost. I'm not actually being captured by one thing.
Right.
So, or I'm not being overwhelmed by the activity.
Right.
So right now I have this lovely broad awareness.
Yeah, I get you.
That's really what I was getting to.
Oh, good. Yes, yeah. And I think that, you know, that is what I think many, you know, spiritual masters would say is, you know, is an aspect of the awakening, is being able to be settled in just being aware, and that recognition of just being aware, the open awareness, and there's the world of experience going on within that. And as we, you know, become more, whatever the word is, as we move along in our journey more, being able to sit in that space of being aware, to sit in that space of being aware and notice what is there. You know, that may be, you know, part of what some people call witnessing aware, although I don't like the word particularly myself, but I'll get into that another time. But yeah, good. I mean, my response is good. Good to see you again.
Thank you.
I have another question from Joseph Kuhn. And Joseph, you can go ahead and unmute yourself and I'll read it and then you can discuss it. Peter's discussion is, in my mind, in my understanding, within mindful awareness. Beyond this is conscious awareness, which is not confined to mind-body interaction. How does the spiritual aspect of our being, conscious awareness, become more recognized?
Where are you? What do you actually mean by conscious awareness? Who is it?
Joseph?
Yes, I think I'm unmuted.
Yeah, you are.
I'm probably somewhat on my own with this because I've been listening for, I was a science-based ecologist up until about 15 years ago. Then I went into what's called deep ecology and also referred to as spiritual ecology, which
Your sound has disappeared.
Yeah, Joseph, you can't hear anything.
We can't
hear anything. Your sound went away, Joseph.
We're not just a body-mind interaction. So the spiritual aspect of our being seems to get sort of put on the shelf in most of the discussions I'm hearing about awareness. And I just think something's being missed there. I'll leave it at that.
Okay. We couldn't hear a lot of you, unfortunately, a lot of what you're saying. The spirit, yeah. This is a whole conversation. I mean, what we mean by spiritual? Just how I see it, and all of this is just, you know, how I see it, there's no absolute truth here whatsoever, is what I call the spiritual aspect of our awareness is our coming back closer to our recognition of ourselves, that innermost aspect of our being, that unchanging essence of ourselves, which I would say is our spiritual self, our spiritual self. And it's not something different. I think this is how I see it. Our spiritual awareness is not something different from our day-to-day awareness, but it's much more the essential core of our day-to-day awareness, which is not normally noticed because our attention is so caught up on all the things we have to do, think, worry about, plan, and distracted by our self-distracting culture. But I sense this is something we could have a much longer conversation on sometime, because it's like teasing out, part of this is teasing out words, how we're using words slightly differently, probably some ways or other.
Yeah, that's helpful, Peter. Thank you. It is a huge topic. When you leave the mind-body interaction and go into the universe, God, as some would have it, it is, you know, the biggest topic, you know, we could possibly open up. But being in advanced age now, I'm less concerned about my body-mind. I'm just not that concerned about it that much, because I'm looking at, okay, when I take that last breath, what's my being then? And so I'm kind of in a preparation mode for that.
Yeah, good. I think, yeah, coming out of the, not denial, but I think we ignore it. I think that's really valuable. Good. Yeah. Okay, wish we had more time to chat at length. I spend hours chatting about these things with friends, but we have to be much briefer here.
Okay, Hannah had a quick example that she wanted to give. So, Hannah?
Sure. Let me try to make it quick. I have a recent good, somewhat entertaining example of focused attention. And the way I see it is that I hang out in being a lot of the time. And I find that my focused attention gets hijacked when there's something in my ego that's triggered, something that is unhealed. And it happened very recently where I really noticed it and for the first time was able to work with it in a successful way. It's a very old trigger, a 15-year-old anger that came up like a volcano. And as it was my New Year's wish to not move on it, and I remembered it, and my attention was hijacked by this strong feeling, I said to myself, this is a chance, Hannah, now. If you want to do it, it's now. And I fell back into being and just watched it. And to sum it up, it took 4 to 5 days of doing that. I had conversations with a few people. I wrote a letter, which I never mailed, and mostly just used free will to keep moving back, loosening up, as you say, attention, and falling back into being. And after 5 days, the anger was completely gone. And a new situation arose with the same group of people. And this time, no anger came. And I said to myself, or I asked, what is my contribution, if any, in this situation? And I just waited. And after 2 days, I don't know, an idea came or of how I should contribute. And it was so brilliant. I know it didn't come from, quote, the little me.
Right.
And it just felt right to move on that. And I did. And it had wonderful results. anyway, the celebration was and is that I managed to avoid going. So my theory is that focused attention is triggered by or drawn by our unhealed wounds or our what's left in the ego. It's like a spider web where attention gets caught. I'm talking beyond the basic, I'm hungry, I'm tired.
Now that's powerful. Thank you. Thank you. I mean, that's a lovely description of what I was pointing to. Thank you. I mean, what language we give to it, you know, and sometimes it may be something from the past or it could be big thing, small thing, but our attention gets grabbed by something and the stories then set off our emotions and we get caught up in them. They you know, become a sort of self-reinforcing thing, but just doing what you were doing, just like stepping out, which is basically, you know, the thing of choosing to take your interest away from it, to withdraw your attention. And I love the bit you said at the end, and this is what I was saying happens. It's like the choice not to get engaged is the best choice we can make, because out of that, your inner wisdom, this is the thing, your inner wisdom comes through and says, maybe this is how I should be seeing things, or whatever it was.
But it took a while, and I didn't turn away from it. I sort of allowed it in being, or watched it and felt it, and then it took a few days for it to after it evaporated, then and I could distinguish, you know, what was a wise energy and not quote little Hannah idea.
Lovely. Yes. It takes its own time, whatever it is, you know, could be longer, whatever it is, it takes its time, but it's beautiful. Thank you. Beautiful. Glad you had that and went through it. Lovely. Yeah.
Thank you, Hannah. Next question is from Terry Bowen. Do we ever have a gap in our attention? Not the focused attention, but the open focus.
Ah, interesting. Yes, if I look at my own experience, yes, it seems to be when we sort of, it's an interesting question. I mean, there's obviously times when we wander off into somewhere else, but then the attention is wandering off where we don't know where we, you know, we come back, we don't know where we've been. It's an interesting question. Do you want to say any more, Terry?
I think you sort of answered this at the beginning in a different way, but I kind of visualize a container that's empty, and then all of our thoughts, our personalities in this container. Of course, there's no container because it's just emptiness. So if that's our tension is this whole everything in this container, then can it ever be nothing in there?
I mean, can you have a completely empty awareness?
Or is awareness the emptiness of all attention?
I'm just thinking, I mean, it's what comes up for me is these fine distinctions like this. We can play with it. We can talk about them. And yet I feel if they're not, is it actually in my experience? That's what I'm wondering. Is one of these things, if experience is empty, is it an experience? That's one of the old conundrums. You know, can you have an experience of nothing? You know, these things have been, I mean, debated. There's a whole book written on this years ago. You know, can there be can there be complete emptiness? But if you're aware of complete emptiness, then you're not completely empty. In fact, there's a Buddhist text which has the 16 forms of emptiness, which is emptiness. It starts off emptiness of the experience of emptiness. Anyway, I'm wandering on. Don't know.
Okay. I'm trying to get your distinction between attention and awareness.
Okay.
I kind of get the awareness emptiness, but can we ever have attention to nothing? Even the open attention.
We can have. I think we can have the openness. Well, let me put it. For me, there's the openness. There's the opening to stillness. In the stillness, there is nothing happening. But there can be openness to the stillness. That's how it is for me. There's nothing happening. There's complete stillness, and the stillness is in the attention, is in my awareness. There's attention to the stillness.
Okay, thank you. I like that.
Great, thanks.
I've got quite a few more questions.
We often think of an hour, but I'm happy to run on while there's questions
for a while. Okay.
If it gets past 4 o'clock, no.
Okay. Just one comment was Simone said, even with this short time, I feel such a sense of relaxed ease and even a sense of ecstasy with the feeling I was looking back at the one who was looking. That's sweet. Thank you, Simone. Another question from Priya was, I usually meditate for 20, 30 minutes in the morning. Some days I fall asleep. Do you have a suggestion for a group meditation or a course? I feel like I'm missing out or not doing something right by just sitting without any teacher.
Well, the first thing I would recommend is my own course, obviously. I have an online course. It's called How to Meditate Without Even Trying. And after, because I find people putting effort into meditation is where we tend to go wrong to begin with. And that's a series of 5 lessons, starting from the very, 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 very simple and gradually building up the practice. So there's a different lesson each week, which I know many people have found helpful. I think it's important, yes, if you have a practice, just to sit each day. And what's important about it is not trying to get anywhere. I think that's a mistake that people often make, is trying to get somewhere in meditation. And we hear all these wonderful stories about meditation. We think, this is what's going to happen. And when it doesn't happen, we think we're not meditating properly. We're not getting anywhere. Basically, for me, meditation is about allowing the mind to relax. It's not about coming to some new, wonderful, altered state of consciousness, which can happen. But it's really about letting the mind relax. And as we do, just becoming to feel more at ease and more peaceful in ourselves. But that's what I recommend. The course is, maybe you can put in the chat, Linda.
I have done the course.
Oh, you have? Great. Hello.
It was years ago, I think 2012 or 2013.
Okay.
And I have it. I'll have to look back into my resources now.
Okay.
But like I said, I sometimes fall asleep.
Okay.
Like even today, I fell asleep. So I don't know, maybe I'm just tired all the time. But I feel lost without having like a community.
Okay. Yeah. So. If it's any solace, I fall asleep sometimes. I've seen really experienced, well-known, distinguished meditators who are famous names sitting up there nodding off to sleep. I think in our culture, you know, we all have some sort of sleep debt. We're tired, and you know, when we're meditating, the way I see it is, it's like the being, your body is saying, or yourself is saying, finally she's stopped, finally she's let go, I can relax and like grab a bit of sleep. So don't feel sleep happened. That probably means you're tired. What I always suggest is, if you do fall asleep, finish with a little bit of meditation, so that when you wake up, just meditate for 5 minutes. What's your meditating with a group, you were saying?
Yeah. sometimes I just feel like, I mean, I've done like a Vipassana course. It was so long ago. And, you know, but even with that, I don't necessarily keep up with the
right
proper practice.
Right.
So I just feel like I'm missing out.
Yeah. I think being regular each day is really important. Even if you don't have time for, you know, to sit for 20 minutes, just sitting for 5, 10, keeps it a regular practice. So it's a regular part, rather than saying, oh, I don't have time today to do 20 and skip it. If you don't have time to do 20, do 10, do 5. Because that becomes important just in terms of just stepping back from the busyness of life and just quietening down.
Well, the one thing that I've hung up on, like I read your book and I've given this as a gift to friends, letting go of nothing. And, you know, the part where you talk about synchronicity and where your teacher would say, like, are you feeling that helpfulness from life? Sometimes I find myself looking at it, I'm like, I'm not getting it. Like, so I must be like not doing it.
So. I'm sorry. I'm sorry you get that interpretation. Yeah. I wouldn't worry about that. I mean, I think the main thing isn't, you know, how much support of nature you're getting. I think a lot of people do find that happens. Things seem to work. The main criteria is, are you feeling easier in yourself? Are you feeling easier in yourself, more relaxed, close? You know, are you, the way I put it is coming home. If all you're doing in meditation is just ending up with endless thoughts after thoughts after thoughts with no interruption, I would say maybe, you know, go and dig out my first lesson again, if you can find it. If not, email me and I'll send it to you again. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's just
coming back to the basics rather than looking for. I think this is one of the mistakes we make. We're looking for something as opposed to just sitting quietly doing the practice without any goal. Just, you know, exploring how it is to just allow things to be as they are, rather than the thinking mind coming in thinking, "No, this is how things should be. This is what I want. This is what should happen." Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Thank you. That's very helpful.
Yeah. Any more? If you need anything else, just email me. We can always chat. Yeah.
Sounds
good. Okay. How do you think this process relates to seeing things as they are in the Buddhist sense? Seeing things without the influence of our assumptions, projections, filters, conditioning, etc. That was by Barbara Schultz.
Yes. I think it is that. It's just this, that's it in other words. It's our thinking mind that gets into laying judgments, interpretations, putting all these layers on things. It's our thinking mind that does that. And so when the thinking mind becomes quiet, I think we are just experiencing things as they are without all these other layers. So I think that is what the Buddhists are pointing to and many other traditions. I don't know, do you want anything else, Barbara? Do you want to add anything to that?
You had actually just said that, seeing things as they are. But I just want to appreciate the subtlety that you bring to this, Pete, and the way you unpack things. It's really wonderful to be with you again. We haven't done this for a long time. We haven't been with you. So thank you very much. That's very helpful.
Good to see you both. Yes.
Good to see you too.
Yeah. We may get those local groups going again sometime. Yeah.
Lovely. We'll try and come. Come up to see Reg.
Yeah. Okay.
Great. A few more.
Okay.
Lee Pollock says, I have heard meditation described as simply sitting at the door and waiting, and the mind is the equivalent of standing in the doorway blocking entrance.
Yep. These sort of analogies like this can be informative, but in the end, it's like, they're not actually the practice. So I think there's a lot of truth in that. And that's why, you know, I think the essential practice for me, coming back to what I was saying earlier, is making the choice to withdraw your interest from the thoughts. If the thoughts, the thinking mind is the doorway blocking it, then don't, what people tend to do is think, oh, I must stop the thoughts, I must control the thoughts. That's the common reaction people have. They say, oh, I can't meditate, there's too many thoughts, I can't stop my thoughts. We can't, they'll keep coming. But what we can do is when we notice one, we notice we're caught up on it, we can just choose, in this moment, I choose not to follow it anymore, which means I choose to withdraw my interest from it, and the thought in the doorway will just vaporize. It'll go away. It may come back later. But we actually, we have a tremendous power there in not following the thought. It dissolves. We're not keeping it going. Only when we follow the thought do we keep on continuing it. So yes, but for me, the practice is choosing to take our attention away, not to follow it, not to withdraw our interest, not necessarily to put our interest somewhere else, to withdraw our interest from the thought and see where we are. Oh, here I am, sitting here. That's fine, then just be with the sitting here. We don't have to, I mean, there are techniques where you take your thought away, take your interest away from the thought and put it on a mantra or your breath or whatever. I prefer just simply withdrawing the interest and then just being here. Now, to quote Ram Dass.
Couple more questions. What is, this is by Dr. Gilbert. What about when my attention is out of my control and I'm drawn to my hunger and need for sleep, even though I would rather go there? What I mean is sometimes I feel my attention is hijacked.
I think our attention is hijacked 90%. 99% of the time, probably it's hijacked by things, whether it's stuff coming up from, you know, you're talking about from in the body or advertisements or whatever's going on in the media, whatever, our attention's always being hijacked. And the first step is recognizing it. And then, as we've been saying, we have the power to actually place our attention or to unplace it from that and be with something else. It may come back. But I don't know. I mean, do you want to say any more yourself about it? This may not answer you complete. What I said may not be a complete answer for you.
Well, especially when it has to do with an addiction.
Uh-huh.
You know, a very, very strong addiction. How would I work with that?
I'm talking about a physical addiction or a mental addiction.
Well, I guess it's both, but it's physical, a substance addiction.
Yeah. Noticing, I think the first step is noticing it coming up, noticing the thought that's there, rather than, it's like taking a little distance from it. It's like, there's that urge, there's that thought. If we can take a little distance from it, and not to say it's going to go away or getting rid of it, but if we can just take that distance and almost like saying, here it is again, in that distance, we may just be able to choose for a moment just to step back enough not to have it grab us. I know it is difficult, I know. But I mean, Linda, do you want to say any more on that yourself? I know you've explored sort of this mental side a bit.
I'm sorry, I was texting somebody in the chat, so I wasn't paying attention.
You were paying attention to something else.
All the time.
You were focused and completely ignorant of what was going on here, which is how it happens. It's great.
It's more for me about, and when I see that I'm losing that attention, it's just being kind about it and bringing myself back. You know, taking a quick focus on something that particularly like an inner sound, or for me, sound really works.
Right.
You know, once I realize I'm listening to sound, I have a more focused attention.
Right.
That's for me. But other people, it's the breath coming in the nose. It's some other object to bring it back. But.
Right. The question was when you got an addictive pattern going on, an addictive thought just coming in and taking you over.
Oh, right. Well, we're not responsible for that first addictive thought. The only thing we have a choice over is whether we want to continue and get obsessed with it. Mm-hmm. So there, I do have a wonderful little way of working with that. It's like not ignoring it. Like, oh, there it is. There's that addict. There's that wanting of food. Where there's that, you know, kind of naming it so that I can greet it. And but not right now. You know, just not right now. But in a kind, gentle way. So because I can't ignore it, but typically those things do pass. You know, if that's helpful.
Yeah, thank you. I knew you had something like that. I know we talked about it before. Thanks.
Yeah.
Anything else?
I think that is it.